Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Myrtle Beach, it is ScaryCast. This is Dr. John Stamey. We are really excited about tonight's show. Tonight's show commemorates the completion of the 4th Annual Lizard Man Festival held at Owens Park Field in Columbia, South Carolina, where the 5th Annual Festival will be next year, hopefully the first weekend in October. We had a lot of people there. It was a ton of fun. Thanks to Blue Tile Skateboards for inviting us to come out there. We had Ralph Gerrals. We had Melissa Pierce. We had Eric Colley and Harvey Colley with all their telescopes. I mean, it was, we had Robin McRae. It was just so much fun. And glad that everybody was out there. We killed it. I tell you what, where we really killed it was on the internet. We had so many people watching, and people were watching Devin Tate's documentary on the Lizard People of Los Angeles. So it was just, it was a grand time, and I want to thank everybody that was involved in it. We're just so glad that you were, and we'll see you next year in about 11 months for the fifth annual Lizard Man Festival. Got to start working on it tomorrow. But so we took a day off and, you know, had to go back to work and do all that stuff. And, of course, it is the first Monday night of the month. And that means that we have John LeMay on here, truly one of our favorite authors, truly one of my favorite authors, such a great man of letters, and such an interesting person. And boy, do we have the topics for all of you. First of all, I want to introduce my co-hosts, Queen of ScaryCast, none other than Robin McRae. How are you doing, Robin?
I am doing great. Glad to be back. Hey, John. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
We're glad you're here. We really are. And then comes the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, one and only Dr. Trey Donnelly. How you doing, Trey?
I'm doing well. Drove in from visiting my daughter in Tennessee today, so it was all day in the car.
Oh, did you have fun?
And in, well, Atlanta is always fun when whatever time of the day. It was fine.
Well, that's great. Glad you got to visit her. The last time I was in Chattanooga, my transmission went out. That was about 20 years ago, and some nice gentleman in Chattanooga fixed it and took a check. And the check didn't bounce.
Good.
He was happy, and I got back. That's when I lived in Clemson, South Carolina. I was the happiest boy on the planet when I saw Welcome to Clemson, and I was home. It was scary not having a transmission all the way in Chattanooga. That's a long way. But anyway, we're glad you're back. Glad you're here. Our man from West Hollywood, the producer of the Los Angeles Lizard People, the LA Lizard People documentary, the one and only Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
Hey, everybody. I'm doing great.
Hey, Devin.
Hi, Robin. I just got home. I was in Kansas City for Halloween this weekend, so I got to take my niece and nephew trick-or-treating last night. And we also had a screening of the Lizard Man, Lizard People of L.A. documentary that you mentioned. So in honor of the Lizard Man Festival, we were the Kansas City contingent of it.
Well,
that's
great. We're glad Lizard Man. It's great that the Lizard Man Festival was celebrated in Kansas City. Devin, we're going to have to do that again next year. Remind me, and we will have other celebrations of the Lizard Man, the one and only Lizard Man of Lee County, South Carolina. And I tell you what, it was kind of a difficult task to get him all the way to Columbia, but we did. It was successful. And again, thanks to Blue Tile Skateboards, they were absolutely wonderful co-hosts for that event. And so now,
well, congrats,
we come around
on that,
to
John. That's cool.
Well, thanks very much. We all appreciate it. So now we come to our guest tonight, one of our favorite guests of all time. He knows so much about so many things, and he's the only person I know that grew up in Roswell, New Mexico. Everybody else you know, they moved in or whatever. This man is a native. He's a really cool guy. He's got great books, and the one and only John LeMay. How are you doing tonight, John?
Hello, all my ScaryCast friends. I'm doing great. I had a fun weekend. You know, I can talk about this since you've had Billy the Kid on before. As y'all remember, Billy the Kid always shot up the town of Lincoln. Well, Saturday I went to Lincoln for Day of the Dead. That was really cool. You know, really, Day of the Dead
was
supposed to be day. Well, you know, Day of the Dead, I take it for granted that most people know what it is, but maybe I just know because I live in the Southwest. It's more of a holiday in Mexico. We're on November 1st, you know, the day after Halloween, they celebrate all the deceased, and they put up little shrines to them, and then a lot of people will...
Oh, so that's the real Mexican Day of the Dead. Yes, that is a phenomenal thing. Oh, my God, yes. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yeah,
I was excited.
No, that's okay. What might jog some people's memories is not this current James Bond movie that just came out, but the one from before that, 2016-15, whatever, called Spectre. It has a big pre-credit scene in Mexico during the Day of the Dead, so that's probably where most people have seen that. But Lincoln's version wasn't quite as big as the one that they had in the James Bond movie, but it was still pretty cool. There were people walking around with their faces painted like skeletons and dressed up like the Old West. I wish our friend Billy could have been there. It was really cool because, you know, Lincoln is basically a living ghost town. So that was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I just thought I'd mention that. You know, some people would find that interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I had no
cool.
idea that Lincoln had a Day of the Dead. I think that's a wonderful thing for those of you that are ScaryCast fans, and there are apparently a lot of ScaryCast fans now, and that's great. So that's wonderful. Now, John, we have several topics to talk about. I'm going to turn the floor over to you first of all, to talk about your books. I'm really excited about the Universal Hammer book. Would you get going on it? Everybody wants to know.
Yeah, so I wrote a review and guidebook of just all the Universal Monster movies and all the Hammer Monster movies. So it covers, when I say classic monsters, it means basically any of the ones that were famous from books that got adapted into films, which of course means Frankenstein, Dracula, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Even Hammer's The Vampire Lovers, starring Carmilla, was based on a book called Carmilla. So just any kind of classic monster from either Hammer or Universal. I reviewed every single movie between the years 1910 and 1980. And, you know, if you know a lot about horror movies, you probably won't learn that much, I'll be honest. But it's mostly just my own personal thoughts about which movies I liked and which ones I didn't. And, you know, I have some odd tastes. I think my favorite Hammer movie is actually Dracula AD 1972. That's my favorite. And most people
really?
Kind of roll their eyes at that one. Have any of y'all seen that one?
I've seen all the Dracula movies. Yes, Robin?
I haven't, sorry.
Okay, well, I guess most people make fun of it because, you know, it's set in 1972 and has Peter Cushing as like a modern version of Van Helsing, and Dracula gets resurrected in 1972 London, and it's got all the hippies and all that, so it's kind of dated, and people make fun of it, but I think it has a really good style, so it's one of my favorites. But that book, though, if anybody's intrigued by it, it's called The Big Book of Classic Monster Movies. And that's what you type in the search engine to find it.
That sounds absolutely awesome, John. And John, I want to tag on something here. There's an entire genre of horror movies that has been abandoned by one of its creators, and I want to talk to you about that after the show tonight. I don't know. Have you ever heard? We had him on as a guest one night, Aiden Chick. He is a co-creator of analog horror. Are you familiar with that genre?
No, uh-uh.
It is absolutely spectacular. I put up the Facebook page for analog horror. I got analoghorror.org, and it redirects. I think it's very interesting because it uses old broadcasts as part of the plot, and I think it's very, very interesting. But what was troubling is in the documentary, he never found the original analog horror film, which I don't know if any of you remember this, but I think it's one of the most frightening films ever made, starring the one and only Debbie Harry of Blondie. It's Videodrome. Now, does anybody remember Videodrome?
I love that movie. I'm a big Blondie and Debbie Harry fan, so I had to watch it, and it's really cool.
It is it's terrifying, isn't it, Devin?
It is.
It really is, and you know, Aiden Chick turns out to be 18 years old. He's done 20 different analog horror shorts, and he just was not old enough to know about Videodrome. I saw it premiere in the theaters. So, you know, the field of horror is rich, and it's a beautiful panorama of things that truly go bump in the night. So anyway, John, we'll talk about that. But, yeah, everybody go out and get – I've got to get my copy of – now tell us the name of the book again, and then we will move on.
Yeah, the big book of classic monster movies.
That sounds like your biggest hit book ever. It just sounds like it.
You never know. What turns out to be the biggest hit ever can surprise me, because, like I said, Jaws Unmade is the most profitable book I've ever done, and I didn't see that coming. So maybe this one will top it. Who knows?
Well, I hope it does, just because I love horror films and all that. Now, did you say that you had a second horror book, or just a second book coming out?
Oh, I think what we were talking about is Noe Torres and I actually have two more of those Cowboys and Aliens type books completed. One is just kind of sitting there waiting to be edited, and the other one we're currently editing right now, and that's where the Ambrose Bierce story we'll talk about later comes from. But I actually, okay. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry if you guys have already talked about this on the last show or something. So you got to understand, Noe and I, the book we're writing right now, we're working on, is going to be UFO Cases of the 1930s. And, of course, we're going to include the underground lizard people of L.A. And I had completely – I know you had – all of y'all had to tell me that Devin was doing a movie on it, but somehow I forgot that. So I'm really excited to see Devin's movie. And if y'all haven't already talked this thing to death, I'd love to hear a little bit about Devin's documentary, unless that was covered last week or something. I don't want to bore
– No, not
you know,
at all. In fact,
already heard
Devin
–
would you mind just taking over for about 5 minutes and telling John about it? Because I think every one of us would like to hear a little more about the lizard people of L.A. And also, John LeMay, I will send you a YouTube link to the film.
Oh, great.
Well, thank
All right,
you, John.
Devin,
yeah,
the floor is yours.
Thank you. I love the topic. So I'm definitely not an expert on it. I'm still learning, and there's a lot more to know and to research. So hopefully I'll update the video that I made last year at some point. But basically there's two concurrent myths that I was exploring. And the first one is a more literal one, which is the LA lizard people. So they were not a lizard hybrid people. They were just regular, supposedly super smart people, advanced race, you know, advanced intelligence. And they revered the lizards. So they built these tunnels way, way down below what is now downtown LA. This was back probably in the 1800s, if not before. And they had like some sort of chemicals that could bore these tunnels. And so they kind of lived down there, and they used them to store their treasures. So apparently they had all this gold and whatnot buried down there. Well, this legend got passed down, and eventually in the 30s during the Depression, this guy, George Shufeldt, actually somehow found this map that he said was a map of the tunnels, and he convinced the county of Los Angeles to let him dig down to see if he could find the tunnels. So it was a big deal in the press for a while. LA Times covered it quite a bit. But every time he would get down to, you know, the depth that he was trying to get to, the tunnels would fill up with water. And it just ended up costing a bunch of money, and they never were able to, like, get down deep enough to where he said they would find the tunnels. And, you know, eventually the Depression wore on, and, you know, people didn't want to spend money on things like that. So it just kind of, you know, the investigation dried up. And, you know, a few people have talked about it here and there since then, but there hasn't been much actual exploration. So that was one part of it. And then the other part I was linking it to is, There's always been this rumor, and I know it's kind of a conspiracy theory, about these like humanoid or human reptilian people, like a race of kind of shapeshifters, and they're secretly in control of everything. So they're in the government, they're in the entertainment industry, they're in the sports industry, everything, business, commerce. And so that I kind of tied the two legends together because it's kind of one of those things you hear, especially in LA, you know, about the lizard people that are secretly in charge of Hollywood and the Illuminati. So I kind of queried whether these two were related, and somehow, you know, the tunnels had something to do with that, that lizard people conspiracy. So, you know, there's a lot to explore and read and look into with that whole topic.
Well, I can't wait to watch it.
That's a great summary.
So that'll be awesome.
Right.
I'll definitely send you a link.
Well, Devin, I'll just forward this to John as the show's going on, because I want to make sure he has a copy, because I think, historically speaking, it's a great documentary. And you did a good job, and that was kind of the cornerstone of the third annual Lizardman Festival, which was online because of COVID. So we want to thank you as the executive producer of the Lizard People of LA documentary, 2019. And just thanks for every, or 2020. And thanks for everything you did on that and letting us show it at the fourth annual Lizardman Festival. So that was wonderful. So John LeMay, you'll be able to take a look at that and enjoy it. So, I guess we've come to the point before we go to the
Ambrose Bierce. I got to ask Devin something else, since he lives in Hollywood, and I just think the listeners will enjoy it.
Sure.
Too. So I heard it's like kind of a more recent Hollywood conspiracy, and I've seen a picture of it. So I guess it's outside of the theater where they do the Academy Awards. They had shot a movie back in the 19-teens. I don't remember. It was like pre-1920s. Some silent film about Babylon, I think, and like the big Babylon gate and set is located somewhere in Hollywood, like outside where everybody can see it, right? Something like that.
Yeah, so that was that movie, I forget the name of it, but it was one of the early silent films, and there was, yes, the Babylon set that was built. It was gigantic, and after the movie, there was no budget to tear it down, so they just left it there for years and years until it finally deteriorated, and, you know, somebody finally carted it off and got rid of it. But then in 2000, right around the turn of the millennium, they were building a new project at Hollywood and Highland, the intersection. You know, it was a big shopping mall also called Hollywood and Highland, but it was a huge redevelopment project. The subway station is underneath. There's like six levels of parking, and they recreated parts of the Babylon set there, including these like gigantic elephants that kind of towered over the whole shopping center, which those are now being removed. So some people are glad to see them go. Some people are up in arms about it. It's kind of that whole culture wars thing. But most people, I think, that live in Hollywood don't really care too much about the mall anyways and what they do. It is a really old movie that nobody really knows about. So almost nobody got the connection when they would come to the shopping mall.
Well, the conspiracy theory I heard is that they did like real Babylonian occult rituals on the set. Either filmed them or they didn't, and that was kind of like their secret Illuminati type deal. But I guess right now the word on the street, and I saw a photograph of it, is that it's all of a sudden been draped under a huge black tarp, and it's covered up now. I didn't know if you'd seen that in the flesh, or, but I saw a picture of it that someone took, and they claim it's recent.
So you mean the original set or the shopping center?
I think, like, the set that's on the shopping center, like the whatever the big Babylonian gate was, is what I understood.
Yeah, that's true. I walked by the other day, and that whole gate is covered in black. And you know what I heard is a long time ago, I heard that that was actually built as a structure with floors inside of it so that there could be – there's rooms inside that could be finished out theoretically to be a restaurant or a bar or, you know, an event space. But I don't know that that's – you know, I don't know what they're doing with it right now.
Okay, yeah, I would like to hear alternating opinions because, you know, the conspiracy people will say, well, it means this, and then maybe someone who lives there will say, oh, well, they're just remodeling it, and I peeked under the tarp, and I saw it, and everything's fine. And so I was just, that's interesting, though, that you haven't heard why they covered it up, so that's kind of odd and intriguing, I guess.
Well, I know they're rebranding it, so they don't want to call it Hollywood and Highland anymore. They want to call it Ovation Hollywood. So it definitely has something to do with that, but I don't know exactly what part it's going to play.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's interesting. I definitely want to look into more conspiracy theories about things that have happened there.
That is very interesting, especially the fact that whether or not that they had Babylonian rituals. I mean, that just gets back to Zachariah Stitchin and all of his Babylonian and Sumerian stuff, and it's just such great entertainment. It really is. In fact, I'm surprised, speaking of Zachariah Stitchin, I don't know if everybody knows who he is, but he wrote these four books about the Sumerian culture and all and Planet X, Nibiru, and all this crazy stuff. But they sold worldwide, and I mean, I have my copy. It's a four volume set. I got it sitting on my bookshelf. I wouldn't let it go anywhere. It's just very interesting. So Devin, you and I will, that'll be something we can talk about later. Just, you know, how does all that fit together? I think it is really interesting. It's part of our culture. And I'll say this as I close about culture and the lizard man. I was talking with a fourth grade teacher in Sumter, South Carolina at the Iris Festival about 4 years ago. And I told her about the Lizard Man Festival. And she came up, she made the most profound statement I've ever heard. She said, you know what, I don't care if you believe in the Lizard Man or not. And I guess we can expand that to say, we don't care if you believe in any of these myths, legends, or whatever. If they occurred in your area, you at least need, when you graduate from high school, you at least need to know what they are, because they are part of your culture. And I just thought that was a brilliant statement attributed, and I cannot remember her name, but I would attribute that. There was a very nice fourth grade teacher that said that, and I liked what she said. Because many of us have lived in areas where there are legends, myths, and everything. And it's just good to know about them, because that's part of where you grew up. I mean, I know down in Pawleys Island, South Carolina, if you don't know who Alice Flagg is, you got a problem. She's the most romantic ghost probably in the country. Now, yes, Trey, a little more romantic even than Agnes of Glasgow, because there's an unrequited love story about Alice, and that's what makes her such a beautiful figure in romanticism and in the ghost world. So anyway, that's just what I got to say. Any takers or comers that have different opinions, let me know. But anyway, now, John, so we've talked about this. That's great. We got you some background on the Lizard Man of L.A. by way of Devin Tate. Now, tell us about your other book that has the Ambrose. I'm dying for you to get to the Ambrose Bierce story. I've got a connection with Ambrose Bierce, and we're going to have a blast. The floor again, sir, is yours.
Yeah, so Noe and I, when we did our Cowboys and Aliens books, you know, we did them sequentially where they were in order, you know, from literally 1800 to 1899, and that's where we cut them off. And, you know, so, you know, in other words, like once we finished books one and two, which went up to the year, I think book one was like 1800 to 1864, and book two was 1865 to 1895. And book three was just like 1896 to 1899. So what I'm saying is, you know, like if Noe and I had found a story from 1855 and we were too late, we couldn't put it into the third book because we had already established it was only going to be like 1896 to 99. Because, you know, Noe and I are very particular and like everything to be orderly. But, you know, obviously we found a lot of stories that we missed. And so we call those the lost cases. And they're not necessarily lost to everyone, but they were lost to us in putting the books together. And in addition to those lost UFO cases, like I actually found one about a guy who claimed that he got taken on a ride in an airship and then he got put in an insane asylum, you know, when really the poor guy was just an alien abductee. But back then they didn't know what that was and just thought he was totally insane. Like, that's one of the stories that I missed. It's kind of just the typical airship story that we put in there. But there was one that really got me excited, and I thought it was real initially. And you'll know what I'm talking about right away. It's called The Difficulty of Crossing a Field. I think it was also called Wither or something like that. But it was
it's truly one of the greatest, very short stories ever written in America.
Yeah, I mean, it's just about a farmer who walks across his field. He vanishes into thin air, and then there's like this crop circle type ring around the spot that he vanished, and it's like the family can hear his voice coming out of the ring. And, you know, I was really excited by this story until I learned, because it was published in newspapers like it was an article, but it turned out it was just a short story written by, you know, Ambrose Bierce, the writer. And a lot of people, even to this day, think it's a true story. But my point is, you know, I was going to include it in the first book because it was said to take place in 1855. But again, I was like, well, it's not real. It's just a made-up story, and, you know, I had to boot it out of the first book. Well, a little while later, I was kind of reading about how Ambrose Bierce, he didn't just make up a story. He had a friend, some guy named Dr. Hearn. They never gave his first name. It was just Dr. Hearn. Dr. Hearn was really ahead of his time in terms of belief of, like wormholes and things like that, alternate parallel dimensions and universes. And Dr. Hearn believed in these things he called vacua, like probably vacua is in the vacuum of space or something, but Dr. Hearn believed that there were these little portals across the world that you could step into and disappear, and that's what inspired Bierce to write his story. And then Bierce himself disappeared without a trace. Nobody's ever found his body. They don't know where he went. So that kind of gave...
Okay,
John,
may I interrupt you? First of all, there are two major questions I'd like to be answered. First comes from the Queen of Scary Cast, Robin McRae. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with portals and how they may or may not coincide with Ambrose Bierce's story that, you know, here's some dude and you can hear his voice, but he's not there?
Well, first of all, I'm not familiar with that particular story. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay. It's about one page long.
Yeah, portals I'm very familiar with. I was taught by Bigfoot on how to open and close them. I've had multiple experiences with them. I've had animals run into them and completely vanish into thin air and come back out later. I've talked to people that have actually put their hand in it and watched their hand completely disappear and then pull their hand back. I accidentally went into one at one point in time, although very briefly, and I was able to come back. The thing with portals, they are not made for our bodies at all. Our bodies don't tolerate them well. when I went into the one that I went in, it was because I ended up going to a different place. It was very fast. I went in and I was there, and then when it was time to leave, I did the same thing and I came back. It doesn't always work that way. It's like the best way to explain it is when you get on the expressway in your car, okay, and you're going down that expressway, it veers off and it goes to different expressways and it goes all over the place and it's just endless. It's like a spider web that never stops. When it comes to these dimensions, it's not that much different. There are literally thousands of dimensions that, you know, and you have to be able to know how to maneuver in these things to end up where you want to go and where you shouldn't be. We have no clue how to work portals. You know, we have our government that has CERN that keeps trying to open them up, which is the dumbest thing known to mankind. They're dangerous. They are not made for our people at all. Our bodies don't tolerate them. The Bigfoot said at one point in time, I had one I'm very close with ask me to go into a portal, and I said, well, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma, I have responsibilities, like, can I come back? And he said, we can't promise that. Your bodies aren't made for it. And I never did go into it. I had already gone through it briefly multiple years beforehand. I was very grateful I made it back. I know people that have gone into them and come back, but that is not the norm. Okay, that is not something that is recommended. It is not something that I would tell anybody to even attempt. We have no way of knowing where we would end up. Okay, our bodies don't work well in them. We don't know what we're doing with them. It's just not a good idea. There's more than one kind of portal. There's one that's called an anchored portal, which stays there at all times. I have one across from the end of my driveway that's anchored. There's also portals that are not anchored, which means they can be opened and closed and moved whenever they want to. I have contacts all over the world that have literally watched the Bigfoots just open a portal in the ground and jump down into them, and then it's gone. I've had portals open up in my front yard for no apparent reason, and 10 minutes later they're gone. I have a photo of one outside my garage door. There's a UFO above it. A portal opened up underneath the UFO, and a head was coming out of it. I have pictures of it, and then it was gone. And it hasn't been there since. You know, portals are very complex. They're not just this thing and, you know, you read about in the books of just you dive in it and you go here and here and here. It doesn't work that way. It so does not work that way. They're very complicated. They're very complex.
So I guess, Robin, my question to you is this. Would it be possible that you could get into a portal and you could be screaming to get out, and people could hear you, but they couldn't see you? Is it possible that that could happen?
I would say yes. I'm not sure they would even hear you. I can say that it would not surprise me that you've gone into a portal and you can't get out, no matter what you're doing. I think that's entirely possible. If your vibration isn't up high enough where you're going to be able to activate that portal to open it, completely.
Okay.
I mean, as far as hearing somebody yelling to be let out of it, I don't know. You know, that one is a good question. I'm not quite certain that I can 100% say that that part would happen, but I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to say that it wouldn't either. I don't know everything. I mean, I'm not an expert, but you know, there are times that we hear things and you turn around and there's nothing there. Is that something that could have happened? I rule out nothing after everything I've seen. I refuse to rule out anything, although I do think it would be unlikely.
Okay, but just, I guess, in general, it might be possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Great. So, John LeMay, I just wanted to focus on that because I think that's important that somebody like Robin, who's got a lot of experience with things like this, you know, might have some notion that, well, you know, maybe it could happen, maybe not. And I love that story. I when I first found it, I probably read it 10 times in a row. And I don't care what any of those folks say. I think it might be true.
It's
now, again,
possible.
What is, John, what is your opinion or what are the facts that you have found out about a man walking across the field?
Well, I do believe in portals like Robin was talking about. Absolutely. There's one, a really cool one in Arizona, supposedly. I shouldn't even take us down that rabbit hole. But anyways, I'm just saying, I do think portals are real. But now, the difficulty of crossing a field, that gets so convoluted because, let's see, in the 1950s, some other author made up his own variation of it about a man named David Lang. Now, in The Difficulty of Crossing a Field, the character's name is Williamson. It's not David Lang, but again, some author, I forget his name, he made up a story for Fate magazine about how David, it was the same, he just ripped off Bierce's story that David Lang walked across the field, he disappeared, there was the crop circle that they could hear his voice coming out of, and some people really did a deep dive research into this and found that the guy who wrote the David Lang story and passed it off as fact faked it all because he had made up these signed affidavits from the witnesses, and when they had a handwriting expert examine the signed affidavits, and they were just the author's handwriting over and over again, he faked them. So that really muddies that story. And again, Bierce, I don't think ever claimed that the story of Williams was a true story. It was just that Bierce had heard of Dr. Hearn's theory, which coincidentally kind of rhymes with CERN, but it's Hearn with an H. Dr. Hearn's theory about these little holes in space and time that you could fall into. And there was, though, a real disappearance around that time. The farmer's name was Martin. And Martin just kind of vanished without a trace. And Charles Fort saw this article about Martin. And I probably don't need to, I'll explain Charles Fort just in case a few people listening don't know who he is. Charles Fort lived back in the early 1900s. He would go through newspaper articles and find all the weird stuff and kind of collect it. But Charles Fort, he made the mistake. He found this article about the disappearance of the farmer named Martin. And he attributed that to supernatural causes. And what Fort didn't know was there was a follow-up article about Martin that revealed he had committed suicide and hanged himself. But everybody forgets about that. So thanks to Charles Fort, they think Martin was the real-life, you know, inspiration behind Orion Williamson. But, you know, and again, Bierce might have read that article himself. It's just very convoluted. But the point is, it's just kind of coincidental that Bierce wrote this famous story about a man vanishing into thin air, and he himself just vanished without a trace.
Well, I will cover that. I'm going to take 3 minutes. And first of all, for a lot of people that do not know Ambrose Bierce, I have some background on him because back when I was teaching at the university, I fell in love with his publication called The Devil's Dictionary. And it was just a bunch of funny definitions that were very timely and very politically oriented many times. And it was great fun. Bierce was the editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. He was claimed by many, and I am going to agree, that he was probably the greatest intellect of most of the 1800s. I would say that Oscar Wilde probably, you know, followed him as one of the greatest intellects of all time. But Ambrose Bierce was just a genius. He was a genius with words. He was a genius as a writer. And he lived in San Francisco, and he was absolutely the toast of the town. And he had this book called The Devil's Dictionary, or this concept called The Devil's Dictionary. Just a lot of fun things. I didn't realize I should have grab my copy. It's somewhere in one of my boxes, and I could read some of the Devil's Dictionary little definitions. But they're a lot of fun. So there is a legend. Are you ready for the legend of where Ambrose Bierce went?
Where?
He was down in Mexico with Pancho Villa fighting the wars. He had guns and he had everything, and he was an on-the-ground fighter. And the legend goes that they went into a cave, and he just, you know, somehow ran a little in front of everybody, and there was a tall, dark gentleman with a mustache, and there was a fire going on, like a fire pit. And that was the devil himself. Now, you'll probably find some things that really speak to this. But the devil said, "So you think you're smarter than I am?" And, of course, Ambrose Bierce, just like Johnny, and the devil went down to Georgia, he said, "Yes." He said, "I guess I'm going to battle you for my soul and millions of dollars." Now, who is that? Who is that? I hope that's a person that is coughing or whatever, and I hope that's not just some very strange noise.
From...
I don't know what that was.
No, that's not Velvet, but it's interesting. I've heard it four or five times. So this is a lot like Lavinia Fish. Pardon me?
I think it's not me.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. So anyway, he challenges the devil, and he loses. And that's the end of Ambrose Bierce. We don't have the details of the confrontation, but the legend has it. He went into the cave. They were fighting with guns and arrows and all this stuff outside. And so Bierce meets the devil, and he challenges him like Johnny did in the Devil Went Down to Georgia. Lo and behold, here we go. He lost.
What
so
is
that? That is the legend.
I think it's just Trey messing with us. See, Trey's been really quiet tonight.
Trey, are you still there?
Trey?
I'm still there.
No,
that wasn't
I think
you?
We may have picked up a...
What you got?
I said that wasn't you that made that noise?
No.
I don't know
what
that is.
We've picked up a visitor is what we've done. Because, Robin, do you remember when we were down in Somerville and we did that Murder 123 about Lavinia Fisher?
Yeah.
And we had Lavinia Fisher. Yeah. Well, I think we've picked up either Ambrose Bierce or a very dastardly spirit or something. But, yeah, we've picked up something. And that's when I first heard it, I said, oh, good Lord, we have picked up something.
I had that happen.
But anyway, so.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we've picked up a spirit because this is a very murky topic. It's got great people. It's got Ambrose Bierce. It's got the devil in it. It's got the devil's dictionary. It's got so much stuff in it that it might have attracted something. Anyway, John, tell us about Ambrose Bierce and the skulls.
Yeah, so after I finished that the chapter on him and crossing the field and all that, I found some more information that I've never heard before. So, you know, Mitchell Hedges, I forget his first name, allegedly discovered the crystal skull in Mexico, I'm trying to think what year it was, 1923, I think his daughter Anna Hedges claimed that she found it, and then her dad took it. They claim that's just a cover story, because Mitchell Hedges was a spy for the U.S. to kind of come down and spy on Pancho Villa at the same time that Ambrose Bierce was hanging around with Villa in 1913. And that's basically the year that Bierce disappeared was. The last telegraph anybody got from Bierce was in December of 1913, and they never heard from him again. So they think he disappeared in 1914. But there's people out there who think that Bierce and Mitchell Hedges together somehow found that crystal skull. And then some people even put forth this crazy theory that maybe Mitchell Hedges bashed Bierce over the head and killed him, and that's why he never saw him again, and that's why Mitchell Hedges had the skull. But that's, you know, that's just what you call wild speculation. You know, that's kind of unfounded, but it makes for interesting reading. Now, I wrote that chapter a few months ago, and I actually proofread it yesterday, and I've already lost, I don't retain things very well anymore because I'm always in the middle of so many projects, so I hate to say it, even though I read it just yesterday to proofread it, I've already forgotten a lot of the details, but the bottom line is just that, you know, there's a good chance that Ambrose Bierce met Mitchell Hedges, and they might have discovered that crystal skull together. And, now it's coming back to me. So Mitchell Hedges, you have to understand, he also wrote a novel called White Tiger. And it's about a white man who goes to Mexico, and he's kind of renowned by the native people there. And he somehow falls in with a group of Aztecs, or modern Aztecs, I guess you'd say, that have a hidden underground Aztec city, and they have crystal skulls in it. And it's so interesting because I think, what's his name, Mitchell Hedges wrote and published this book, White Tiger, before the discovery of the crystal skull was ever made public. So, I mean, that's kind of eyebrow-raising that he was writing about crystal skulls in a novel, then he finds one for real. That's why a lot of people think that he found that crystal skull long before 1920, whatever the year was, that his daughter Anna claimed that she found it. And it does get weirder because they talk about the underground Aztec city that has the crystal skulls. Well, the folklorist J. Frank Dobie, he's pretty reputable. He wrote about the lost, he called it the buried city of enchantment in Mexico that was kind of like the buried Aztec city rumored to exist somewhere in there. And he described it exactly the same way that Mitchell Hedges described it in White Tiger. So that's kind of an interesting parallel. And then the last parallel that kind of gives it some credence, you know, again, White Tiger is about this white man from America who becomes renowned amongst these kind of Aztec people. Well, contrary to Ambrose Bierce dying or disappearing in 1914, there was an explorer down all the way down in South America in the 1930s, and he ran across this really elderly white man in the jungle. And it's kind of funny because this sounds like something Ambrose Bierce would have loved. This white man in the jungle claims that he's being held hostage by a tribe of natives that revere him as a god. And he kind of hinted that he was Ambrose Bierce. And he gave the explorer some letters to take back to the U.S. I guess that would have proved that he was Ambrose Bierce who had survived. And the explorer lost him. But, I mean, doesn't that sound like a kind of a funny fate for Ambrose Bierce if it's true?
Interesting. Very interesting. Trey Donaway, you've been too quiet tonight. Do you have any...
Days been quiet.
Do you have any comments as to
no,
what's going on?
No, I've just been listening because I don't really know any of the individuals we're talking about tonight.
I don't either, Trey. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, well, some nights I can latch on to something, and other nights I just primarily listen, and tonight is a listening night, I guess.
Well, it was very interesting. I got kicked off about 2.5 minutes ago. Something's going on. Somebody's messing with us. We got all those rather demonic sounds. Then I got kicked off, and none of you knew that. So
it is Day of the Dead.
Oh, that is true.
I think it was talking about the Hollywood monolith. or whatever. And whoever listens in on us from the Department of Defense got mad and cut you off.
That could be.
When I told the legend of Ambrose Bierce and the devil, that's when that demonic sound got very loud. And Robin, you've been on this show. You and Devin have been on this show longer than anyone, and you do remember that we have had very strange things happen on Scary Cats, haven't we?
Oh, multiple times.
Yeah, a lot.
So I mean, there we are. I mean, you know, you can call Coast to Coast AM. The real thing. This is the Scary Cast is the real thing. It's the most powerful show, I think, running right now. And we have things happen. The Lavinia Fisher thing was frightening. That was with Maestro down at the Somerville Comic Con. And Robin was there.
Freaking out.
So I mean, you know.
Yeah. Maestro was like, he couldn't figure that out. That really kind of blew his little mind. He was so sweet. Him and I were sitting next to each other, and he kept looking at me going, are you listening to this? Are you listening to this? And I'm just cracking up. I'm like, yeah.
Lavinia, for everybody's edification and verification, Lavinia Fisher was kind of a not very nice lady, and she was a thief. And she owned the 10 Mile Inn, and people would come and stay there, and they would rob them and send them on their way. But the county pinned murders on her so that they could actually reclaim the property from her and then sell it to the United States Navy, who put a naval base there. And that is exactly what happened down in Charleston, South Carolina.
And no, John. She was not guilty of murder.
Not at all.
But
they
wasn't
accused
she
her of murder. And
I thought she had her day in the sun for the first woman hung in the United States.
She did, Trey. No, she did. They just said, okay, you committed murder. Okay, thank you. We're going to kill you, and now that you're dead, you have no heirs, so we're going to take your property. And that's exactly to the letter what they did. And so Lavinia Fisher is coming through, and I've still got that. In fact, I've got it. I've got that as a as an episode of a Scary Cast from about 2.5 years ago. I mean, she is there talking to us through the speakers.
Yeah.
And Robin, it's creepy as all get out, isn't it?
Well, you know, like I said, Maestro got really creeped out. Some people, I think, that were actually in the audience were getting very creeped out. To me, I didn't feel creeped out because, first of all, she had already given me information, and I was sitting there, and I hadn't put it out yet, and then all of a sudden she starts talking through the speaker, and everybody could hear her saying exactly what she had already told me. And Tony Filozzi was helping us that day, and he was hearing it. I think he heard it also on his end. And Maestro was, like, turning his chair around. I don't know if he thought he was going to see her or what, God love him. But he was kind of laughing at the same time. It was just incredible. It really was. You know, I've had other experiences where stuff has come through, like phone lines and things. I was talking to two very good friends of mine. We were in a three-way conversation, and we were talking about reptilians. And one literally came through the phone, and you could hear it. I mean, it was hissing and making just horrible, horrible noises. So it wasn't like the first time I'd ever heard something like that. What I really, it stood out to me about that one, John, was the fact that it's one thing to have a couple people on a phone and hear it, and it stays between you guys because that's who it's going through. But in that case, the audience heard it as well.
Yes,
it
they
wasn't
did.
Just I heard it, you heard it, Maestro heard it. Everybody heard it. I mean, you can't get more validation than that, and it's something that cannot be faked. It was just extraordinary. I totally loved it. I'm sorry I did.
I mean, we were as not faking it as you could ever get, because it was about all I could do to get the speakers set up and everything, and there we are, and there we go. And here comes Lavinia Fisher. I mean, just absolutely frightening. So, I mean, we've had episodes in the past where we've had communication, and then tonight, I think five or six times I heard that guttural or whatever it was.
It sounded
I heard it five or six times.
They were blowing their nose, but it was endless. It just kept going. Like, you can't blow your nose for that length of time and keep it going. So that was kind of extraordinary. But, yeah, it was definitely there. And the first time that you mentioned it, I didn't hear it. And then I heard it the second time, then I heard it again. So, yeah, that was pretty neat. I mean, it really was.
Well, to everybody that's listening in, welcome to ScaryCast. You never know who's going to show up on the show, and it might be a voice from wherever.
And, John, you know how it goes at my house.
Let's not even talk. We'll save that. Trey wants to come down. I've got another person that wants to come down from Columbia, and we'll all commiserate about that when it happens. But
we had a ghost running around here the other day. We had muddy footprints in the house from the Bigfoot. It was a freak show.
Well, Trey, you have said several times that you wanted to go down and see what would happen. Might be a surprise.
Yes, I want to see Robin's house and see some of her friends that frequent her house.
Yeah, you know, we were all outside the other night, and my daughter's boyfriend had built, we have one of those metal grated fire pit things. You know, it sits off the ground, not a large one, but a big enough. So we've got it in the front because I've got all the animals that go outside in the backyard, and I don't need them dumping it and starting the whole woods on fire. And so my daughter's boyfriend had it going, and we were all outside. We were roasting marshmallows and laughing and having a good old time. And all of us were watching all of this movement in the woods. And multiple eye shines. Just, I mean, not one or two, but multiple all the way around. So the next morning, my daughter got up and went to work, and she happens to leave for work about 5:30 in the morning. And she's driving down the road from our house, and there was a Bigfoot youngster was sitting on the side of the road, was literally in the road, and it turned around and it looked at her. And of course, she was raised amongst these things. You know, she's seen Bigfoot since she was little. It was just part of the reality. And she hasn't seen one in a few years. In fact, when we left Michigan, she's seen multiple eye shines, but she's never actually seen one in the state of South Carolina. Hears them all the time, but hasn't physically had a sighting. And it turned around and it looked at her, and it flashed like a bluish color eye shine, which is fine. That doesn't mean they're upset or want to harm you or anything like that. And then it ran across the road, and it ran like a gorilla would run. And it went up into these people's yard, and it would go so many feet, and it would stop and turn around like, okay, is she going to follow me? And then it would run a little ways and stop, and it turn around. I mean, it was just hysterical. So, yeah, and this time of year is our favorite time of year. You know, it's not overly hot. It's not freezing cold yet, and they are just having a ball. They're bringing the kids out more because it's not, you know, the weather's not that bad. And so, yeah, it's been pretty active, to say the least. And yesterday it was just, or not yesterday, I think it was Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. It was a freak show here, literally a freak show. I mean, my God, poor Ryan was sleeping and everybody else was gone out of the house, and he had laid down. He wasn't feeling well, and he laid down thinking that there was still my son and his wife in the house, and nobody was here. And he kept hearing the dogs bark, and he thought, oh, it's just, you know, Caleb and Lillian. no problem. He didn't realize they had left. And finally, the dogs went crazy, and they were mad. It wasn't just a barking. It was they were mad. And he got up, and he came downstairs, and the doors that are always locked are now unlocked. And that was the first thing. Then there was mud all over the floor. And he's like, what is going on? So he walks outside, and somebody had let the mini pigs out of their pen, and they were running aimlessly around the backyard. And then he sees the mud at the bottom of the steps, and there's a footprint with toe prints in it. He's like, okay, now I know what's going on. And nobody was here. Everybody had left the house. And so my son and his wife came home. They went in their bedroom, and they came out, and they said to Ryan, they said, did you turn our lights off and the air conditioner off? Because, like, everything shut off, TV, lights, everything in our room. He's like, no, I never went in there. What are you talking about? He said, everything is shut off. And the power is fine in there. He said, but everything has literally been turned off. Well, as we know, the little girl ghost that we have here, as well as the older gentleman that keeps an eye on her, they love to play in that portion of the upstairs because it used to be before my son and his wife were in there. It's a very large room. It's like living room size. It's very large. And that used to be my grandkids' toy room. They played with the toys all the time. And when they weren't here, we would find those toys would be brought downstairs. They'd be brought all over the house. Or if they were put away, you'd go up there and they would have been out. So somebody was up there messing around. So now the kids are all teasing me about Mom's haunted house. I'm like, hey, nobody gets hurt. Everything's fine. You know, but it's been a real freak show around here lately, especially if we are at the bonfire pit. You know, I mean, you hear them moving in the woods and you hear them and, you know, there's trees all the way around us. And they'll go out there and they'll shake it or whatever. And my daughter and Ryan were out there the other night. She came in and she said, and for years I've told her she has the ability for mind speak and she has never wanted any part of it. And they have tried and tried to speak to her and she will not respond. She's like, I don't care if I have abilities. This isn't my thing. You deal with them. Well, now she's finding out she's going to get it regardless. And she went outside the other night. She came in and she said, there's another clan here now. I said, well, that makes that number 6. And Ryan looked at her and said, how do you know there's another clan? And she was just very matter of fact. She said, I know it. I said, thank you for actually listening to the mind speak. I've been trying to tell you, you've been able to do this since you were little. You know, so she's finally starting to come around. I think they were starting to get impatient.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Now, John LeMay, let's please get back to what you were talking about.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to take over.
You know, we have digressed to some wonderful experiences or stories.
You saved
so
me because that was the extent of the story. Robin saved me because that was it. You might have found the crystal skull, and that's about it. I'd have to read my own book again to remember all the details.
You've got fascinating things, though, in your book, John. You really do.
Yeah, thank you. That's the problem. You know, it's just there's so many books, and each book's a different chapter. And I mean, like this book, The Lost Cases, we cover a lot of stuff that's tangential to UFOs, like there used to be rains of flesh and blood from the sky. Pretty odd. Let's see. Noe's a big baseball fan. He actually did a whole chapter just on airship sightings in conjunction with baseball games. We found a story about an invisible monster that kind of went through a town in, where was it, Iowa, I think it was. No, it was Connecticut. An invisible monster went through Connecticut that we think could have been an alien. I even managed to kind of cobble together a chapter on associations between hellhounds and airships, which, because, you know, sometimes they see hellhounds and UFOs, and I figured we could probably find at least one hellhound airship story, and I kind of did. So, yeah, The Real Cowboys and Aliens, The Lost Cases will have just a lot of really weird off-the-wall stuff in it that we either felt didn't fit in the first three books or we just didn't notice the first time around. So hopefully in a couple weeks that'll be out.
Wow, that's great. Let us know, and we'll post that on Scarycast. I think that'll be an important addition to what you've done. So now, did we have a third topic we were going to discuss, or have we discussed all of our topics?
I think that was it, believe it or not.
Okay. Well, then, here's what I'd like to do. Oh, is that Steve? Is that Steve, Professor Wrestling?
Yeah, I've just been listening in. I had a question for either Robin or just the panel in general. Is there any fictional works that accurately depict portals, like Robin was talking about earlier? But I was wondering if there's any fictional depictions that are somewhat accurate, like Twin Peaks or something like that.
Myself, I don't know of any, but that's only because I don't read a lot of nonfiction or a lot of fiction books anymore, only because I'm so busy living all the real stuff, and I tend to deal with more of the real stuff and from other people. So I'm not going to say that there isn't. I do believe personally that for every fiction book that's out there that may have anything paranormal in it, I personally believe there's a little bit of truth in all of it. Because I think as writers, and I'm not a writer, so I mean, this is only a guess. You see things that go on in the world, or you read about different situations or whatever, and then you create this amazing story to write about because something inspired you, perhaps. And I think a lot of people, you know, whether it's intentional or unintentional, read or hear about people that have these tremendous things happen to them. And maybe they can take some of that and create a wonderful story that's fictional that people enjoy. So while I don't read a lot of fiction books, I would be very honest in saying that it would not surprise me.
I think what I had in mind was more literary, is more film and TV, because there's, I guess, other dimensions in the Twin Peaks, like, universe, and it's, like, very abstract and unsettling type portal stuff, and I was, like, wondering if there's any similar reports.
I haven't watched or read Twin Peaks. I know my kids have. But again, I would say absolutely. I know different fictional things that I've seen on TV as far as movies. In fact, my husband and I have commented to each other about this, is, you know, somebody connected with that had to have known something or had to have either experienced it or read about it or whatever, because a lot of the stuff that you see in these fictional shows and movies and TV, whatever, there is a hint of truth in all of it.
Interesting. John, I didn't want to interrupt your...
No.
Show.
Thank you for your question. No, it was a great question. We're always glad to have you. Steve is now one of the co-hosts of Pro Wrestling Interviews on Sunday night, along with Adam Helm and myself. And we're just so glad to have him whenever he can come on to ScaryCast. He always adds a lot. He's a very entertaining guy, and I've known him for a long time, and so we're just thrilled
to have
him. I'd
like to say one more thing to Steve, if I might.
Yeah?
If you look at George Lucas, okay, in Star Wars, now, and this is not portal-related, but it kind of shows you a little bit, Chewbacca. Okay, everybody thinks that Chewbacca is a fictional character, and he was created to be a fictional character. The truth of Chewbacca is George Lucas had an encounter with a Bigfoot when he was 9 years old. And when he did Star Wars, that's where Chewbacca came from. So again, there is a little bit of truth in that. While it is a fictional character, there was a reason it got to be there. And that part of it was true.
I didn't know he had a cryptid experience, but it's funny, it does tie in because I think Lucas did want David Lynch to direct Star Wars, but Lynch turned it down. But, yeah, I didn't know he had a cryptid experience. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. That is amazing. And Robin, I think I'd heard that, and I'm glad you mentioned that to Steve because, you know, that's kind of important. That's important to the discussion. So John LeMay, here's what I'd like to do. Since you are our guest, I would like to have each panelist ask you a question, and we'll go in the following order. We'll go with the Queen of Scary Cast, Robin. We'll go with Devin Tate. We'll go with Trey Donaway, and then I'll wrap it up. If we're all on board, Robin, what have you got to ask John LeMay?
Well, this isn't anything pertaining to what he's already got out, but I would really, really like to know what is next on the agenda. I mean, you've had such great topics. You really have. Your books are fantastic. And I would really just like to know what is the next thing that we can be looking for from you?
Oh, thank you. Well, like I said, Noe and I should also have a book coming out pretty soon, hopefully within the next 3 months or so, about UFO sightings in the 1920s. And like
oh,
the
wow.
And next we're working on 1930s, which is really interesting. That's mostly Noe. He's finding all sorts of hidden history of UFOs and how they played into helping to start World War II. Lots of interesting stuff.
Now, are you going to cover like the government interaction with the ET stuff and the treaties?
I don't know. I need to look at what Noe's already done, but he's working on it. He has a lot of stuff. I haven't even started my end of it. So he may have done that. I don't know yet.
It sounds fantastic.
Yeah, he's doing great on it. Like I said, I'm supposed to write the underground lizard people chapter, and I barely even started, so.
That's awesome. Did John ever show you my lizard man photo?
No, but I'd love to see an actual photo of lizard man.
Yeah, I have a picture of it from his chest up, so it's his entire head and shoulders and his neck.
Oh, wow.
I'll get that to you, John, because I've got to get you the link to Devin Tate's documentary.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that we here at ScaryCast are producing some of the best stuff in the world when it comes to these very spurious topics, and so wonderful. And Robin, thank you very much for that question, what can we expect? Because I tell you what, John LeMay is doing some incredible, incredible work. And so he's already going to be congratulated for what he's done.
Hey, Dr. Stamey?
Yeah, yes, Steve.
I have a question for LeMay. I don't want to cut anybody, but...
No, please do. We have time.
John LeMay, what inspired you to write about Japanese monsters and kaijus?
Yeah, Steve, so I just grew up watching those. That was what my parents let me watch. I think they didn't want me watching stuff like Halloween and Jason and stuff that was real graphic for a little kid, so they just had me watch, you know, Godzilla, King Kong, the Universal monsters, you know, the more innocent stuff. So that's how I developed my love for all that stuff.
Yeah, I think our mutual friend Stro, that Dr. Stamey knows, would probably appreciate your kaiju books.
Well, I think I've talked to one of them, or maybe it was talking to you or somebody on one of these shows. Somebody was one of the different guest hosts that's not usually on here.
Right.
Well, that's great. And all I've got to say is thank you for that good question, Steve. We appreciate you, and we're glad to have you as part of Pro Wrestling Interviews on Sunday nights on Facebook.
Whoa, hold on. Pardon?
Sorry,
I had another question. I was looking at his titles,
and he's got a title related to Space Ghost. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, wait, yeah, I couldn't. It kind of broke up. What was the title?
You had a book called Xenorama, but it had a Space Ghost on the cover. I saw that.
Yeah, so that's not my book. That's just the fanzine I write for, and I think Space Ghost was like the headliner article. Wasn't even I think my article, but yeah, it's just but I'm glad you brought up Xenorama, because Xenorama with an X, really cool little fanzine, very eclectic. So definitely check it out.
Cool. Glad I could ask you about that, John. Sammy, please continue.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, again, thank you for that question. It was a good one. Devin Tate, what have you got to ask our guest?
Yeah, I do have a question. First, I wanted to say hi to Steve and say I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan, so maybe on another Scary Cast we can talk about the portals in Twin Peaks and the Tulpas and the Black Lodge and Judy and all of that good stuff. So I'm a huge fan.
Okay.
I used to have...
Devin, stop right there. We're in three episodes, that's what we'll do, okay?
Okay.
We're scheduled for two episodes right now, Experiencers, and then one I'm going to talk about. So then we will do the Twin Peaks episode, and you and I can coordinate that, okay?
Awesome. Sounds good. But, yeah, John LeMay. First, I did remember the movie. It's Intolerance is the name of that movie that the Babylon set was built for. It was D.W. Griffith, and it was his follow-up to Birth of a Nation. So that's the movie. I tried to watch it one time, and I couldn't make it through. So it's an old black and white silent movie, and it tells four different stories, and they tried to colorize each different storyline a different color. It was just I couldn't figure it out. But my question is, I wondered if you'd ever heard of this. I remember back in the 80s, one of my favorite toys that I ever got, that my cousin actually had first, and I had to copy him, was this mini monster play case. I think it was made by Rimco, and it had like all the, it had Frankenstein and Dracula and the Wolfman and the Mummy, and I think it had a couple other ones. Had you ever seen that, or do you know about that toy set?
I would have loved it, but no, I've never heard of it. But I want to like Google it and take a look at it.
Yeah, you'll have to look it up. It's one of those things I would love to buy, you know, if I had room for more stuff. Maybe at some point I'll be able to track it down and add it back to my collection, because I had it when I was a kid, but, you know, who knows what happened to it.
Well, that's cool, Devin. We want pictures of that, okay?
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much. And Dr. Trey Donaway, our Surgeon General, what do you have for John LeMay?
John LeMay, my question is that, you know, this report that came out from the government that was going to explain all there is to know about UFOs, well, the only thing that came out of it is it's kind of cemented the UAP, like, who cares? Do you think that was just the first step? Do you think there's going to be another step, another progression, something where it would actually have more factual information that they're going to release? Because as far as I'm concerned, that report was kind of like a nothing burger. So do you think there's going to be a further step at some point in the future?
I agree. It was a nothing burger. And I think if there is an actual like report with juicy stuff in it, I think they're holding on to it for an emergency when they want to distract us from something that's even worse, and then they'll put it out there, so we'll all get onto that, and we won't see what's really happening.
Sounds like a plausible theory.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much to both of you for that. And I guess I will close with a comment instead of a question. And I would say, John LeMay, again, the most exciting thing that ever happened to me was that in your book, American Sightings, 1910 through 1919, there is a dedication. It says to my good friend,
Dr. John Stamey, keep on believing. And I think that is the biggest accomplishment I've ever gotten, to have a wonderful author like you say something like that and to dedicate your part of the book to me. And we really love having you on the show. I think this has been a spectacular show. I believe we had a demon come on. I've got to talk to somebody to try to analyze the part of the footage. I think most of us heard it, and it's just you know, it's just the crazy crap that happens on ScaryCast. But we want to say thank you, and we would love to invite you back as usual for the first Monday of the month, which would be December. And we want to thank you and wish you the greatest of success with your books. And I'll get you the link to Devin Tate's documentary. We'll do whatever we can to help you. I know you've got a lot of resources, but whatever ScaryCast can do, we're a great group. With Dr. Trey Donaway, Robin McRae, Devin Tate, and myself, and we love helping people as we explore this paranormal universe. So I want to say thank you to everybody who listened. And Steve Logan, the professor of wrestling, thank you so much for being here, because it's always fun having you. Steve, again, a new star as one of the three co-hosts of Pro Wrestling Interviews on Sunday night, 9 p.m., right here on Facebook.
Hey,
so
Doc,
thanks to everybody. Yes. Is that?
One more question, sorry. Mr. LeMay, favorite Mothra movie?
Mothra 3, where she fights King Ghidorah back in the day of the dinosaurs.
All right, I got to watch that later. Thanks, LeMay and Stan.
Well, that's great. Another great question. So thanks to everybody. We appreciate you being here. We'll be back next week. Okay, so that everybody knows, next week we have two experiencers. We have T.J. McMillian from West Virginia, who's got some great, great ghost stories. And we've got Devin Beechler from Odessa, Missouri. We're going deep into the heartland with some great stories. And then the next week, got a surprise announcement, because as soon as the Lizard Man Companion comes out, there might be a brand new book coming out, and it's going to be called Elijah and Ezekiel, and it's going to shock and amaze everybody. And my co-author will be there in 2 weeks. We're working, and in fact, as soon as ScaryCast is over, we're working on that. I'll be doing my call around tomorrow to all of our panelists and our guests, and I wanted to say thank you to everybody. And then, of course, the next week, Devin, now exactly what is our topic in 3 weeks?
I'd say Twin Peaks, portals, and tulpas.
Okay. Well, that's good. So that's exactly what we've got. We've got a lot of things planned. It's a lot of fun. We'll see about the demon that we think it may have been a demon that came on here. So all kinds of crazy stuff on ScaryCast. We love everybody. Thank you. We'll see you next week, same time, 9 p.m. Monday night, on the greatest paranormal show in the universe, and it can only be ScaryCast. We'll see you next week, and thank you, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.